Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Biscuits, episode 30. We're in our 30s now. Everything's falling apart. Our back hurts. Our knees hurt. Our hair's falling out. We're gaining weight like we never used to before. Our hangovers are worse than they ever were, even though we only had two beers the night before. But we're going to push through for you, the readers. I'm Dave Lozo of this podcast and other stuff. And you know who else is here?
Hi, everyone. It's Sean from also this podcast and also other stuff, although typically different other stuff than Dave.
So it's Thursday while we're doing this, as always, as usual, which means we're 2 days past Covfefe. So we probably can't do a whole lot by the time this comes out on Friday morning for it to be topical, unless you have anything. If you have anything in the arsenal, let it fly right now.
I love that we live in an age where something can happen at 12:30 at night, and by the time most people wake up in the morning, like, it's already dead. The jokes are already done. I literally woke up that whatever the next morning was, and like, my phone had twice as many tweets on it as it was supposed to. And I'm like, oh, man, okay, either there's a war somewhere or Donald Trump did something crazy.
There was a middle-aged woman who had, like, it was like the most mom Twitter account ever. It was, like, her husband. They were, like, in their, like, 50s probably with, like, their two adult children, a very nice, like, family portrait. And at, like, 1:15 the next day, somebody replied to one of my dumb Covfefe jokes, and she just wrote, "What is this about? What is Covfefe?" And I never wanted to be a 52-year-old woman before in my life, just completely oblivious to the dumb shit on Twitter. She had no idea what it was.
That was the fun thing. Like, I was scrolling through Twitter, and nobody said, like, oh, hey, I know, look at this. For context, it was just suddenly everybody was using the same dumb made-up word in all of their jokes. And I like that there's always, like, there's people who are making actual real jokes, and then there's people who are just taking the thing and putting it into other things. And it's not really a joke, but it's just like, what if I changed one word of a movie title to Covfefe? That would be funny. And then up it goes, and it's like, just the entire, well, not the entire internet, by which I mean like the 0.1% of people who are awake on Twitter at 12:30 in the morning.
So, like, instead of Forrest Gump, it was Forrest Covfefe.
That's a good one.
Boom, 2,000 retweets. Right, what's there. Up?
Yep.
Engagement.
Yep. That's right. So good that some other sports meme account will steal it, strip the credit off of it, and get 10,000 new followers off of it.
What a nightmare we live in. Well, speaking of nightmares,
yeah,
the Nashville Predators, man, it's not looking good.
No, it's not. This time last week, we were both pretty excited about the series, and I don't feel like the series itself has not been good so far, but it's been interesting. I think you definitely can't say that this has been a dull series as far as giving us stuff to talk about, because, I mean, we've basically seen the Predators, other than the scoreboard, just destroyed the Penguins in game one. Not quite to the same extent in game two, but definitely held the edge. And their Conn Smythe favorite goaltender, who was putting up one of the great playoff runs in the history of hockey, just totally soils his crease in back-to-back games, and they're down 2-0 heading back home.
it's taken two games for there to be a legitimate UC Saros movement. People want to see Pekka Rinne, and I understand. Yeah. You know what's funny is I knew that Pekka Rinne, I thought Pekka Rinne was worse last round than he actually was, because I went back and wrote something and I was just looking at his series by series save percentages, and it was 925 last round. That's perfectly very good. That's a very good save percentage. I thought he was worse than that, because I think he had a couple of bad games and let up some bad goals, so it just stuck out as being worse than it was. But I mean, I understand a couple of goals, of one goal went in off Ekholm, one goal went in off Fiddler, but like all three Jake Guentzel goals have to not be goals. Like those are super soft, two ply, gentle on the backside, soft goals.
Yeah.
You can't have those. And like that's what happens when, you know, you dominate shots, you dominate possession, even when you're getting called for weird, wacky penalties that weren't penalties the first three rounds. Like, your goalie can't let in these goals. And now I understand. Like, the thing is like, if UC Saros was Marc-Andre Fleury, if he was Peter Mrazek, like any sort of like backup who I've seen start for a stretch and be good, I would go to him. But I don't know. I think you're stuck. Yeah. I think you're stuck with Pekka
Rinne. But the thing is, like, after the game, Peter Laviolette, I guess, was asked twice. Like, hey, Pekka Rinne is your goalie for game three, right? And he dodged the question. He was like, Pekka Rinne has been very good in the playoffs. But he didn't say yes, of course. I mean, there was, I can't remember even what coach it was, but earlier in the playoffs, there was some situation where a goalie had a bad game. Maybe it was Craig Anderson and the Senators. And they were like, hey, the reporters were like, we have to ask, is he the starter? And the coach was like, that is a stupid question and you shouldn't even ask.
Yeah.
And you kind of thought, it was the same situation, and instead, like, that's why you ask, because Peter Laviolette clearly dodged the question. I mean, as the kids say these days, life comes at you fast. And
they do. They do say that.
You go from like a 940 save percentage and the odds maker's favorite to win the Conn Smythe to maybe out of a job in two games. It's crazy.
It was amazing. Like, imagine if that was like a wedding situation where somebody was like, do you take this woman to be your lawfully wedded wife? And Peter Laviolette was like, hey, she's great. We've had a lot of good times together.
Broad.
Right. But I mean, do you take her to be your wife? Like I said, we've had a lot of great times together. All right, I got to go. Whoa. You've been with her for months now. You can't just do this now when I pop the question on you. You
can't just turn to the younger backup.
She's 34. I mean, I got like a 24-year-old person here, you know, ready to go. I gotta go with the younger. Actually, Jake Guentzel's kind of like that. Jake Guentzel's like the younger, new, better-looking model of Chris Kunitz, where everyone thinks he's the best player in the world, but he's just hanging with Sidney Crosby. He's in the Crosby posse.
Let's maybe get to that, because I know you have some feelings on this. You're referring to Jake Guentzel, but you're not using his full title, which is Conn Smythe favorite.
Based on
what we're hearing from certain chapters of the media, that this guy is potentially going to win the Conn Smythe. Now, I mean, the case for it is he's leading the playoffs in goals. He's got five game winning goals, which is kind of a weird, useless stat, but people like it.
Very useless.
He scored big goals, you know, the winner in both of the first two games. So is he your Conn Smythe?
I got to give the people the sigh.
That was a good sigh.
Intentionally longer.
That's what people come here for.
So you're probably going to get some overlap on the Dave Lozo hockey podcast experience, because you're probably going to hear something similar on the other one that also comes out around the same time. But Jake Guentzel is a guy who feasts off of playing with Sidney Crosby. Like, I understand that he wasn't with Sidney Crosby for the entire postseason. He was in the earlier rounds, and he's shooting 28.6%. It's a lot of puck luck. He is not such a skilled player where he's figured out how to score on nearly 30% of his shots. He's getting some tap-ins. He's getting some bad goals. Between the end of the third round, or between the end of the second round and the conference finals as a whole, he was a non-entity.
Yes.
Like, he was so unbelievably useless that going into the Stanley Cup final, there was debate. It was, who do we scratch, Jake Guentzel or Carl Hagelin? Because he was that ineffective for that long. And yes, he has scored three goals in the Stanley Cup final. He beats Pekka at the end of game one on a shot where I don't know what Pekka doing. Like, he's guessing blocker side. He's shifting his weight over there. Everyone's like, wow, what a laser from Jake. No, it didn't even go off the crossbar of the post. It just went into the top part of the net. Like, a goalie stops that. It's an unscreened shot from, like, 25 feet out. Like, it's not an easy save, but let's not act like he's deking around. It wasn't like the goal last night by Pontus. Like, it was a weak goal. And the two goals last night, I mean, the first goal is one of the most backbreaking, bad, soft, like, why is there an opening there? Like, I get it. Oh, it's a tiny little opening and goal scorers find. No, they don't. That's a bad goal. Stop telling me that's a goal scorer's goal. He went to the net and he got it. Yeah, right. But still, that goal does not go in 99 times out of 100. And then the third goal, I understand if you're a goaltender and there's a right-handed shot coming down that wing and he shoots it at your far leg, it's going to bounce out into a dangerous area. But it does not have to be that dangerous of an area.
Right, and I get it between the circles.
No. And like, Ryan Ellis kind of fell asleep a little bit there too. It's not entirely the worst goal, but I mean, it's an empty net goal for Jake Guentzel. He scored three soft goals. And you know who else has scored a goal in every game in the Stanley Cup final, Sean? I bet you know.
Tell me.
It's Evgeny Malkin.
I've heard of him.
The guy's had maybe two bad games in a row once the entire postseason. He's been a beast the entire postseason. And despite the fact that he has, I think, seven more points than Jake Guentzel,
leads the team in scoring by 4 points right now. Second on the team in goals. First on the team in assists. Had a fight in the Stanley Cup final, which, you know, if he were a Canadian, but if he was a good Canadian boy, that, you know, if Sidney Crosby got in a fight, that would totally be a check in his column.
Absolutely.
You're right, it wasn't much of a fight. But yeah, I feel like we just have to decide collectively, like, we already brutally snubbed Evgeny Malkin on the top 100. And by we, I mean everyone other than you and me, because we had him on our list.
Buy our book on Amazon.
Yes. But everyone else, so it's like, you've either got to just double down, or you, or this is where you kind of make it right. Go, you know what? Like, this is, it would kind of be silly not to give it to Evgeny Malkin. But
no, that's a good point. It does capture the sentiment of people that don't think Evgeny Malkin, they have some weird perception of Evgeny Malkin, that he's not a good hockey player, that where he's been this good for this long in the postseason this season.
Yeah.
And still, it's just like, well, it's either going to be Jake Guentzel or maybe even Marc-Andre Fleury. Like, what are you people doing? Like, I get it. He's Russian. We can't give it to a Russian unless he's, like, the year he won it in 2008, like, he was, or 2009, he was insane. He was way better than he was now, but still, he's as good compared to the rest of the field this year as he was back then.
If Jake Guentzel wins the Conn Smythe because he scored more goals, if we ignore his role on the team, if we ignore what Crosby and Malkin have done, and we just say, this guy had the most goals, he gets the Conn Smythe, I really hope somebody asks Phil Kessel about that.
Mm-hmm.
Because Phil Kessel last year led the Penguins in goals, led the Penguins in points also. And
I looked it up, though. He didn't have any game-winning goals, though, because I don't think he was gritty and clutch.
See, that's the thing. He used up all his goals in situations where it doesn't matter, and he didn't wait. I feel like... And the Conn Smythe is such a weird award, because everything else gets voted on by, like, you know, 500 of us, or, you know, 100 broadcasters or whatever, and this one, it's like 10 guys.
It's like a secret cabal of vote. And one of them, like, so two guys wrote something last night about Jake Guentzel, and one of them is Steve Simmons, and I'm pretty sure he has a say. I'm not 100% sure. I know he did at one point. I remember the year Justin Williams beat out Andrei Kopitar, because Justin Williams scored a bunch of goals, even though Andrei Kopitar, much like Evgeny Malkin, was a beast for 2 months. But, like, here's how it works, too, is, like, this stuff gets decided, like, on off days when reporters hang out and have dinner together. Like people sit around and talk about this. And I remember, like, in 2012, like, being out to dinner in L.A. and, like, hearing all these guys that had the saying that, like, just, you know, they were really touting Justin Williams. And Justin Williams had a much better case than Jake Guentzel did, for sure. But there's just this weird aversion. And, like, no one ever comes out and says it. But, like, if you're European or Russian, man, you need to have, like, a 45-point postseason or be like Nicklas Lidström to have a chance at it. Otherwise, like, they will find a way to give it to somebody else. Yeah. It's unbelievable.
I don't know. It is strange. And then Elliot Friedman had his thing last night. I don't know if you saw this.
Oh, no. What did Elliot say?
Well, his thing was, he wanted to know if the Penguins win, can we split the award with Matt Murray and Marc-Andre Fleury?
No. If anything, Matt Murray coming in and doing exactly what Marc-Andre Fleury did proves that, like, you can just pretty much stick any goalie back there and they're going to give you enough to get the Penguins to win. Yeah. Like, that's how I see it. Like Marc-Andre Fleury has way, to me, like, Marc-Andre Fleury, if he never lost the net and did everything that Matt Murray's done since, for 100%, you can, it's Marc-Andre Fleury's award, I would say, but no, like, you can't, like, if that's the case, let's go back in time and give the Hart Trophy to Daniel and Henrik Sedin. Like, why do we not do that then? Now we're going to start splitting the Conn Smythe Trophy because we don't want to give it to Evgeny Malkin?
Elliot's argument was that it's been done in baseball a couple of times. Now, I don't know if that was
baseball.
Now, I don't know if that was because they intentionally did that or whether it was just a tie and that's what happens if it's a tie. But he brought this up on TV and said that he had asked CJ whether it was something they could be done, and I don't think he didn't say what the reply was, so I don't know if that's even a non-starter. But that, like, that's kind of what's screwing up the Conn Smythe conversation, is that usually if it's close and you can't really figure out what forward to give it to, you just go, okay, just give it to the goalie. You know, if you win the Stanley Cup, almost by definition your goaltender has had a really good postseason, and we've got this weird situation where two guys pretty much split the job, so that's kind of out. Just give it to Malkin.
And if not, like Crosby has a better case this year than he had last year.
Yeah, but like, he's been weirdly, have you noticed him very much in the first two games of the final?
Oh, I agree. Yeah. I think since the concussion, he hasn't been the same, but he still does enough. Like, I saw some stat last night that I think 5-on-5 Corsi's, he's like minus 20 something for the first two games. Wow. Maybe something around minus 20. So, I'm not saying he should win it, but he's, and here's the other thing too. This is such an annoying thing. Of course, plus minus is stupid and nobody should ever look at it. But Jake Gensel's, he's even. He's a zero. And Malkin's plus 10. And I'm not saying that's a reason why Malkin should get it. But you know inside the deepest part of your loins that if that was reversed, you know people would be like, well, Jake Gensel's plus 10 and Evgeny Malkin's, yeah. Like, that's just what they would do. And it's just, it's so easy to just make the narrative for the Conn Smythe whatever you want it to be that particular year, to not give it to the American or to not give it to, because like the pecking order goes, give it to a Canadian at all costs. If we can't figure out a way to give it to a Canadian, like they're trying to split the award to give it to Canadian people. Like that's how they went. Well, what if we split the award and gave it to Marc-Andre Fleury? And no, give it to Evgeny Malkin. He's one of the 100 best players of all time.
I'm with you. I don't know. Like, I feel like Malkin's what? Like, he's 30, 31. Like, we're 5 years away from him retiring, and then we're all going to be like, oh, crap, wait a second. That guy was, like, a ridiculously good player who also was, like, funny and entertaining, and, you know, he actually occasionally says interesting things.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I don't know. Jake Gensel's going to score, like, 4 goals in the next game and then 5 in the clincher, and we're going to be... This entire thing's going to be rendered moot.
The door is open, for sure. I think he can do stuff the rest of the series and make his case stronger. But like as of today, I'm talking about, as of this moment in time, as I sit in this room with my empty water bottle and Tim Barnes killing time by looking at his phone because he does not care at all about hockey, good for him. Jake Gensel is not the Conn Smythe winner at all.
Yeah, because the thing is, like, remember, Conn Smythe is MVP of the playoffs. It's not MVP of the final.
Right.
And Jay, he went pointless in 6 of 7 games against Ottawa when the Penguins were just life and death clawing to get through that series. And he had one game where he had 2 assists. He had 0 goals, 2 assists in the entire series. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, the hat trick against the Blue Jackets was nice, but I don't really think they kind of needed that to finish off Columbus. But
the other thing, too, is that sometimes people show up and start paying attention during the cup final. They're not as wired in to say the Penguins. I mean, the Penguins are the Penguins, so I feel like people should have been, because they played the Caps and they had a series against Canada, so I feel like people should be wired into the Penguins more. Like, I understand when, like, you know, like, let's say, I don't know, like, you're a national writer and you're covering, you know, a conference or whatever, and you don't get to see the Penguins the whole time, or you don't get to see the Kings. Like, say in 2012, you're on the Eastern Conference the whole time, and you cover the Rangers, you cover the conference finals, and then you get to the Stanley Cup final, and you haven't seen the Kings, and maybe you don't appreciate how good Kopitar is because of, you know, he does so many things without the puck and all that sort of stuff. But, like, the Penguins, they're in the spotlight every night. It's not as though if you're not on the Penguins, like, say you're covering, you know, Ducks Predators, you're covering Predators Blackhawks, but you don't see, like, it's Evgeny Malkin. Like, everything he does is so visible to the naked eye. It's visible to stats, to everything. And let's not make this the Conn Smythe podcast. Okay. There's probably other stuff I can, both of us can yell about. Well, what's the deal with Catfish?
Yeah, let's talk about Catfish Man.
Catfish Man.
You know what? I've gone full circle on this, because when it first happened and the guy threw the catfish on the ice and everybody freaked out about it, and I was kind of like, no, I'm not getting into this story, because we've done this. We've been doing throwing wacky mm-hmm. things on the ice for 20 plus years. Like, the rats were 21 years ago. The octopus has been around for way longer than that. We've done this. I'm not going down this road. And it wasn't until, like, the catfish thrower did that radio interview.
Wait, actually, you know what, though? If we're being honest here, if we're talking about throwing things on the ice that shouldn't be there, we've talked about Chris Neal a lot.
That is true.
Boom!
Wow.
Oh, I am full of coffee and zings today. Yes.
Chris Neal, who weirdly never made an appearance in the conference final. That's strange, considering he's the magical... I don't know. So, yeah, he's Jake Guentzel, Chris Neal. That's a Conn Smythe rankings.
What number is bigger, Chris Neal's average ice time in the postseason or the amount of time it took to get the catfish off the ice in game one?
Ooh. I don't know. I have to go back with a stopwatch. Who had more ice time, Chris Neal or that one dead catfish?
And who helped more?
Yeah.
Predators scored two goals after that.
I feel like
that.
The catfish spent more time in the offensive zone. So... I don't know. I don't know which end he threw it at. That joke might not make sense, but yeah, I was not gonna go down this road at all. And then, like, the guy did the interview, and it was just so crazy, where he's talking about, like, running over the thing with his truck to flatten it down, and then
what a story,
and then having to, like, run a test, so he, like, stuffed it into his underwear and then talked to his in-laws for 20 minutes to see if they would, like, be like, hey,
oh god, that's right,
do you have a catfish in your pants right now? And they didn't, so he felt like it was all systems go on the plan. So,
but how does he know that, like, they just weren't being nice? They just were just
exactly.
like how does he know, like, when he walked away, they weren't like, boy, your son-in-law smells like shit.
I would fish. Not bring that up to anybody. I like, the catfish could actually be poking out of, like, the bottom of their shorts, and I'm not saying nothing. So yeah, I don't know. That was an interesting story. I will give respect for doing it in the other team's rink. I think when you do it on your own rink and it's kind of like, yeah, we get it. You threw a funny thing on the ice. You threw a seafood product on the ice. We've never seen that before. Good job. But to do it, to go into another team's arena and, like, do it when you're surrounded by all of their fans, I'll give some credit on that one.
The part that gets me is you've been a Predators fan your whole life and you've never gotten out of the conference finals, never mind get out of it. And now you're in the Stanley Cup final for the first time. And you're at your favorite team's first ever Stanley Cup playoff game, and you spend all that money to get to Pittsburgh to get a ticket, and then you know you're going to get in trouble afterwards. So that's more money out of your pocket, and you miss the comeback. You miss what could end up being the most exciting part of the series for you as a Predators fan, depending on how the rest of the series goes. And you just bail on it to throw a catfish on the ice.
Did he miss the comeback? Or did he cause the comeback?
Wow. That's an interesting thought.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm just... 10 years from now, like, what's going to be a better story? Like, yeah, I was at one of those Predators Stanley Cup games. I was at game one. I was at their first ever final game. And I stayed for the whole thing. I watched from the opening faceoff right till the end. Or to say, like, I was catfish guy. Like, I feel like the catfish... I'm not trying to encourage... You know...
You kind of are.
Maybe I am, but I just know, like, there's some Leaf fan right now who's, like, reaching to his fridge for some waffles. Like, I can be the guy. Like, no, don't. Most fans don't do it, but it is kind of, yeah, I don't know. Like I say, that interview turned me around.
I mean, he was a likable sort. I will give him credit. Like, he wasn't like a douchebag or anything.
No, that's it, which was
kinda weird,
surprising,
but...
because I think he, what did he... describe him, so I think he described himself as a dumb redneck.
Yes, redneck
with a bad idea. So you know what, there's a level of self-awareness here that most hockey fans
like, think about all the stages that he had to go through to actually get to the point where he threw it on the ice, where, like, any other sane person would have been like, this is too much. Like,
yeah,
like putting it in your underwear, worrying about the smell, you know, crushing it down so it was smaller, and that doesn't work. Having to get compression shorts to wear.
Two pairs of underwear. Yeah. Multiple pairs of underwear at the same time.
It's not like once you take the fish out of your compression shorts and then throw it, it's not like you stop smelling like fish. Now you're sitting in a Pittsburgh like jail being interrogated by a detective that's like,
yeah,
man, buddy, you
this guy makes me feel bad about my own level of ambition. Like I've spent an afternoon not writing something because I would have had to click up two levels in the file structure to find my document. I got to maybe reevaluate some things because this guy, this guy just plowed through a lot of obstacles that would have been more than enough to have me tagging out on the whole thing.
That's a good point. Like maybe the reason why I'm so upset with this guy is because it reflects my own laziness and apathy about ever wanting to reach my goals back on me.
I don't know if
I've
ever put that much effort into anything.
No, boy. Now I'm depressed.
Yeah.
So Jake Gensel has gotten me angry, and now this guy has made me take stock in my own life, and I'm not liking what I see. So now I'm depressed.
There we go.
What else can we do? How about the refereeing? I feel like the refereeing has been there's refereeing the postseason's always bad, but and again, I know we've always debated this. I am 100% pro diving, but I feel like the Penguins are so good at it that it's making the series unfair for the Predators because the Predators aren't matching the intensity of the dives the way the Penguins are.
Right.
Like the Penguins are earning those power plays with their dives. And this,
I always wonder, like, is the officiating bad in the playoffs, or is the officiating the same in the playoffs and we just pay more attention to it because nobody cares what happens in the regular season in November? But yeah, maybe.
I think they just get away with more. I think the players know they can just get away with more. They know there's only so many penalties they'll call during the course of a game. Here's the thing that bothers me. The diving doesn't. The Penguins are doing it. If suddenly Ian Cole's skates are just super light and he can't stay on his feet, like, he's doing his job. My problem is that for three rounds, the entire NHL has decided cross-checking is fine. You want to put your stick into someone's back by the boards, do it. Go crazy. And now, and especially in game two, it became all the stuff. Like, again, what was it? Ryan Ellis, I think, cross-checked somebody like four times and they finally called it. Like, I understand. Like, that's illegal. That's a penalty. That is a two-minute minor. I understand that. But for three rounds, it wasn't. It really, really, really wasn't. And then Matt Cullen gets unbelievably pasted into the wall by Matt Irwin. And the referees are like, that's okay.
See, my thing is I will defend the referees a little bit more than I think most fans will. But the one thing I don't like is don't tell me that sometimes you talk to people who are referees or they've officiated and they're like, look, man, we just, every call is its own thing. We don't manage games. We don't think about what happened earlier in the game or last game. And it's like, clearly you do. Because clearly, like you said, there's been no cross-checking. And then they call one and now they're like, oh crap, now I guess cross-checking is a penalty we have to call. Or the fact that, you know, you had the Penguins get that 5-on-3 in game one.
Yes,
two
exactly.
2 minutes, which almost never happens, where it's two.
Never.
Unless there's like a puck over the glass or something that they absolutely have to call in the second. It very, very rarely happens.
It has to be a puck over glass and like a murder.
Yeah.
Like it has to be like two distinct
crimes.
The
murder has
like
to take place outside of the trapezoid. Like it's, and you know, like if you could have gone into Vegas and been like, I would like to place a wager that the Predators will get a 2 minute 5-on-3 at some point the rest of the series, you would have taken that bet because every hockey fan was like, yeah, here, you know, there's got to be some sort of payback. And just like, you know, when your team gets a 5-on-3, you're always like, I hope they score because we're not getting the next three calls. Like, this is it for us for the next 20 or 30 minutes of game time because we're not going to get another one after this. And yeah, I mean, this is kind of like if referees really did their job the way that they claim they do, there would be games where sometimes there'd be a game where, hey, the Penguins got six penalties, the Predators didn't get any. And that's just how it went. But we know that's not going to happen. And so you wind up with these games where suddenly the scale starts to tilt and it's like, uh-oh, now we're having one of those games where we got to call a bunch of things.
Right.
But that yeah, like some of them are just, they just seem so random. And yeah, it's, I don't know. It's not a good look.
Like for instance, in game one in the third period, like Evgeny Malkin 100% slashed PK Subban. That was a penalty. But if that happened and the game was tied already at that point, or if there wasn't a 5-on-3 for the Penguins for 2 minutes in the first period, I would bet all of my balls that that penalty does not get called there. It only gets called there because of the situation and what happened earlier. And the same thing is the same thing in game two with the Matt Irwin hit. The same thing too, where like Cody McLeod accidentally, I'm doing air quotes, you can't see it, it's a podcast, accidentally fell onto Matt Murray. Like, that would have been a penalty in a different situation too. Yeah. To me, here would be my argument if I were to work at the NHL, and the NHL people would be like, no, it's fine. When you referee the game like this, where sometimes a thing is a penalty and sometimes that exact same thing at a different point isn't a penalty, you really open the door to having officials have the power to rig games. Like, in baseball, obviously, like, you know, they have reviews and stuff, but like, a strike, for the most part, is always a strike and a ball is always a ball. Like, if you have like umpires suddenly just not calling pitches down the middle 15 times a game, like, that's a problem. And that's kind of what happens with these penalties, is deciding penalties based on game situations, deciding penalties based on score of the game or how many power plays you've given out already. When you're that imbalanced, like, it really, like, I'm not sitting here telling you that the Penguins are being handed this game by the officials by any extent. I'm not, but it's just really easy if, like, say, like, one day a referee is just like, man, I could sure use $1 million. Wait, you ref in the Stanley Cup final? I sure am. All right, well, good luck on your $1 million, because you can ref the game any way you want. You're damn right I can. Yeah. And I'm not saying a referee has done that or will do that, but it's just when you ref these games this way and the standard changes and it's so wide open, it's the door's open for it, and it could happen at some point. But,
well, I can tell you,
I've got, if the fans I hear from are any indication, man, there are a lot of hockey fans who think the NHL desperately wants the Penguins to win and is doing everything they can. Like, every time there's a weird call, it's just instant. Like, people are like, how are you surprised? It's Crosby and the Penguins, which is ridiculous. Because
right,
this,
is.
You know, put aside the ethical and moral considerations, like, this league could not fix my dishwasher, let alone fix a Stanley Cup final game. And the fact that Connor McDavid went to the Edmonton Oilers in a lottery should put to rest any fixing or conspiracy theories involving the NHL forever. But yeah, you're right. It does. And it's always been this way. That's the other thing. Like, I know there's fans out there who might be new or they're younger and they're thinking, like, this is getting worse, but it's, go back to any playoff game. I mean, go back to the 90s, or, you know, go back to 10 years ago and watch highlights from overtime and see how many blatant penalties, guys being tackled, guys being, I mean, it used to be, I think it used to be even worse, you know, at least these days, like, okay, you get, you know, there's kind of that unwritten rule that there'll be no penalties called in the first overtime, but if we get to second overtime, each team's going to get one.
Yeah.
And, you know, you occasionally get some of these things called. Like, it feels pretty random, but it, like, I mean, there's, like, I'm a Leafs fan, so if I want to feel good about my team, I got to go back, like, 20 years to find my YouTube clips. And, I mean, there's stuff where I'm like, wow, what a great goal by Matt Sundin, but I'm just going to ignore the fact that three guys got tackled to make it happen and nobody called anything because it was the third period of a playoff game.
But, I mean, in the NBA or college, you can shave points. You just get an official that just calls more ticky-tack fouls one night. He can have a spread be covered or not covered because of that. Hockey's different, obviously, because just because you give it hockey, if you give out 8 power plays, they might not score any power play goals, so it's different. But it's just,
you could tilt it
just.
But you know what the flip side is? If they called, you know, everyone always says just call the rule book. If they called the rule book, there'd be 12 power plays per team per game, and we'd all complain that it was just a special teams fest. And maybe we wouldn't all complain, but a lot.
They would get the message, the players. Like the reason why, like, you're absolutely right, by the way, that in 1997, playoff overtime was just like, oh, he's away on a breakaway. Oh, what a diving tackle by Paul Coffey. That's a great play.
Great defensive play.
But I think I'm more annoyed by it now because there was like that brief window after the full season lockout where they called stuff. And now it's like, it's not like, I always say this, like, it's as worse as it's been since 2005-06. It's not worse than it was before that. But there's the play that bugs me the most is it's not even like Sidney Crosby sticking his hip out and hitting Matthias Ekholm when the puck's already gone and then scoring 2 seconds later. Like, I mean, that bugs me, but it's that same play when a guy chips the puck past the defenseman in the neutral zone and goes after it. And now, like in 05-06, you could not get in his way. The second that puck went past you, you had to turn and skate after it. And now, slippery slope, more and more guys just kind of get in the way. They kind of skate into their path. They kind of bump them a little bit. And now in the playoffs, like that is amplified. Like that happens. And if you're a fast team, like say you're the Predators and you have Victor Arvidsson who can skate circles around Ian Cole, like that gives an unfair advantage to Ian Cole. And Ian Cole knows they're not going to call it. So Ian Cole, you know, does what he does. And
Penguins are doing a better job of managing the officials.
Oh, yeah.
Series, I think is the way to put it. But, and maybe that's, you know, we always talk about playoff experience and, you know, all these guys have been to the final before and none of the Predators have. And
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Maybe that's part of it. Speaking of officiating and calling the rules and all this, this is a few days old, so I don't want to spend a ton of time on it. But the offside review in game one, which could stand as the turning point in that game, maybe in the series. This is not the nightmare scenario of like a review in overtime that we're all waiting for. But you know, when you think you're going to be up 1-0 and the goal gets taken back, and then 5 minutes later it's 3-0 for the other team. That's pretty big. And like we've been over offside review, that the debate's been done to death for 2 years now. But that play to me, this isn't about should we have review. This isn't even about how should offside work. Should the, if your skate's off the ice, should that, like, it's just, to me, I thought that if we were going to do an offside review, you needed to have conclusive evidence to wave off a goal. Even if that was just one frame, like the goal on Wednesday night that the Penguins lost, that was one where, I mean, you roll your eyes and go like that. Oh, why are we taking goals off the board for a fraction of an inch? But there's that one freeze frame where you're like, okay, sure, there it is. All right. He was offside for a microsecond. Go ahead, league that is desperate for more goal scoring. Take a goal off the board for that. But the PK Subban one, like, I still haven't seen it. Like, where is anything definitive? And I went on Twitter a couple days ago, and I was like, shouldn't this be a bigger deal? Like, I feel like we all spent more time being mad about Nick Bonino snapping his head back on a fake high stick than we did a goal being taken off the board because of conclusive video replay that wasn't conclusive.
I haven't seen it. And the thing too is, like, everyone knows this, but like if you have the puck on your stick and your body's in the zone, but you have possession of the puck and the puck's outside the zone, you're still onside. And Forsberg was kind of in that weird sort of area where like he was straddling, the puck gets his stick. So at that point, is that possession? Because he has possession. So is that offside, even if his skate is like to me, like, yeah, you're right. I understand what you're saying, that even if he was offside there, like it was in game two for the Penguins, big deal. But I completely, if he's offside, he's offside. It's no goal. But you're right. I have not seen. Again, the NHL is the NHL, and sometimes they have angles that we don't have, and they never show it to us.
I watched it up here on the Canadian feed, and my first thought is, okay, maybe NBC had something, CBC didn't. And then you think maybe the league had something, in which case, put it out there. Like, at some point, like the league, they have this thing on their website, the Situation Room, where they do these little video clips for each of these calls, but they're completely useless. Because all they do is they show you.
It's just the guy from Jersey Shore shirtless doing push-ups, the situation,
More useful if it was that. Because all they do is they show you like the two-minute clip right off TV that you saw. So it's, you see the play, you see a replay, you see the announcement. And then below that, it says, an explanation, but the explanation is just cut and paste from the rule book. It's at X minutes of the first period, the Penguins challenged. After review, it was determined that, and then they cut and paste the block of text that defines offside. Therefore, no goal. Like, at some point, like, get somebody on there who's like, look, this is what we looked at, this is what we saw, maybe here's a camera view you didn't see.
Right, here's the frame.
Why would you have angles that your audience can't see? Like, this seems like the kind of thing you'd want to get ahead of, and yet, nothing. Nothing from the league other than we reviewed it, it was determined it was offside. And I've got people sending me this one freeze frame, like, this is the view. And I'm looking at that going, how am I supposed to tell that? Like, first of all, it's so small and it's blown up. Like, I mean, this looks like my Commodore 64 from 30 years ago.
Nice.
And I'm supposed to look and they're like, well, his skate's in the air. It's like, yeah, his skate's in the air. Skates have blades, you know, like
they're the same color as the ice pretty much.
I'm assuming this guy's skate had a blade on it. So where...
But even if his blade's off the ice, he's already got the puck. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like where does the possession begin? Where does the skate coming off the ice start?
And,
like, how
and
do
just,
those things
it seems to me like
interact?
You know, if you want to have a review, fine. If you want to say, hey, even if it's, you know, because that was the other thing, that goal, it was 15 seconds before the puck went in the net. Even if you want to say, hey, rules are rules, black and white in the rule book, we got to call it. Can we at least agree that in the case... if it's that close, or if it's non-conclusive, that we keep the goal, because, you know, we're wiping things out for, you know, for coin flips. I don't get it. And the other thing that I guess we should talk about, because it links into this, that play happens like literally an hour after Gary Bettman does his annual State of the Union. And if you missed it, if you didn't, this is the thing. Gary Bettman does this every single year before game one of the Stanley Cup final, when all the media is there, he gets everyone in a room and it's, he goes in,
lies,
gives a little,
just lies.
He gives a little spiel. Well, if anybody missed it, good news, the state of the union, in the NHL is that everything is great.
Perfect.
Literally
best league in the world.
Everything you might think is a problem, not a problem.
It's all going the way he plans.
Exactly like that. Like, he literally got up there and they asked him about offside review, and he was like, "It is working perfectly, exactly the way that we want it to,
just the way we drew it up."
And then an hour later, it's being taken off the board. But yeah, that was working great. The playoff format. I know, you know, some of you know, Capitals fans out there weren't very happy with it, and playoff format is great. Like, everything is great. I think this runs his streak to. I don't even know how far back it goes. Like, I've been to a couple of these things, and I've certainly never heard Gary Bettman go like, yeah, you know what? That is something we need to look at.
No, there's the one thing. I think you were the one that pointed it out. The compensation. The compensation for signing executives.
That's the only thing Gary Bettman has ever not liked. And the reason for that, this is the rule that we had for a year or two, where if you hired a coach or a GM, you had to give up a draft pick, even if they had already been fired, which is hilarious, because apparently nobody in the NHL realized that's what the rule was going to do, and they put it in the books. The only reason for that is that Gary Bettman didn't want that rule in the first place. The GMs overruled him, put it in place, and he was basically like, all right, go screw yourselves. We're going to keep the rule on the rule book and until everyone hates it, and then you're going to come crawling back, and we're going to get rid of it entirely. We're not just going to fix it. We're going to just get rid of it, because that's what I want in the first place.
And if I'm correct, I think I'm correct, one of the people that got the advantage was the Penguins because of Bilesma going to Buffalo, I want to say.
Yep.
Yeah.
Probably.
Whatever helps the Penguins.
Whatever helps the Penguins. And yeah, like, he was asked about...
I'm starting to wear the tinfoil hat.
He was asked about concussion spotters. Good news.
Great
working
job.
Great. It's fantastic. Even though we've seen in this series so far, Matt Murray get kneed in the head, fall to the ice holding his head, get up and just continue in the game. Game two, we saw PK Subban get cross-checked in the neck, which was an ugly cross-check, but goes down to the ice, throws his helmet off, and grabs his head with both hands.
And he's right back out there for the power play.
And he doesn't miss the power play. Like, when it comes to the concussion spotters, like, I feel like I'm kind of alone on this, but I kind of get it if you loosen the rules a bit for goaltenders. And I know goalies... you know, a concussion for a goaltender is just as dangerous as for anyone else, but Concussion Spotter, it's a system where you're expecting that you're going to get a lot of false positives. You're expecting you're going to get a lot of false alarms where guys are fine, but you're just, you know, for the sake of safety, we're going to check them out anyways, even if 9 out of 10 of them don't actually have a concussion. If it's a player who's going to miss a shift or two, that's one thing. If it's a goaltender who's got to come out for 5 minutes and another goalie comes in cold, I guess I...
And also, I can see it from the standpoint, too, of where, like, if a player goes down and he gets hit in the head like a skater, you can get a good look at his eyes and get a feel for it. Like, if you can't make out a goalie's face through the mask, yeah, maybe you have a harder time detecting it, too. But, yeah, maybe do a better job there.
Like, maybe just, you know, but again, the like we talked about when it happened to Crosby, when he came back and then did the face plant into the boards and didn't come out, the rules for the concussion spotters are so specific that neither one of those plays qualifies, because Matt Murray got hit in the head with a knee and it has to be a shoulder. And PK Subban got hit with a stick and it has to be a shoulder or a fist. Like, it's you know, I guess I get why concussions are maybe a touchy issue for the league, but like, would it kill Gary Bettman to get up there at one of these things and be like, you know what, we can probably do better than this? It's okay.
You know,
I don't accept,
because it probably opens it up to like legal,
yeah,
liability.
That's why
if he
I
says
get
that.
Concussions, and I've written about this before. Like, if Gary Bettman wants to get up there and lie about concussions, I feel like at some point when you've got the specter of a $1 billion lawsuit hanging over you, that probably outweighs being honest and forthright with your fan base. But yeah, when it's the playoff format or when it's offside review, and the thing with Bettman is he's always like, it, you know, from what I'm hearing from fans, they're fine with it. And it's like, when do you hear from fans?
I know.
What's Gary Bettman's email address? What's the phone line where I can call Gary Bettman and let him know? Like, how is Gary Bettman hearing from, I don't know. So yeah, that's.
How about this for a theory? So they have the lawsuit going, right? And, you know, one slip of the tongue might open them up to having to pay out millions upon millions of dollars. So I wonder if, like, when you see things like the conference finals, Senators, Penguins, and you see Tommy Wingles throw an elbow in Scott Wilson's head and there's no suspension, and you're like, why would they not do that? I wonder if by changing the standards in which you punish for head hits using player safety, I wonder if like that's an admission that you were wrong earlier and that opens you up to an issue. So like let's say if like Gary Bettman one day walked into like Stefan Quintal's office and was like, guys, we need to get more serious about head injuries. So, you know, don't mess around there. Shots to the head. I want to see heavier suspensions. I wonder if like there's like another like lawyer in the room is like, well, if we start doing that, that's our way of saying we screwed up in the past. So we can't change our standard for it.
They have changed it a lot over the years. I mean, the rules ever since Mark Savard. But yeah, maybe at some point. But yeah, you think they'd want to at least be able to go into a court and say like, hey, when we had information about how to make the game safer, we acted on it.
Yeah.
You know, were we later than we could have been? Maybe, but yeah, you know, at least we did make changes. But yeah, I don't know. The good old Gary Bettman State of the Union. And I don't know if we're going to get the Ron McLean interview this year, because that's the other...
What's that?
That's like every year for a while, every year during the Stanley Cup final, during one of the intermissions, he'd do a sit down interview with Ron McLean, and it would be the most awkward thing that you could imagine, because Gary Bettman, you know, Ron McLean, whatever you think of Coach's Corner, whatever you think of the cheesy jokes and all that, like he would get on some questions. Like it wasn't softball time. And Gary Bettman just hated it. And Gary Bettman would like there were a couple times where Gary Bettman would like physically grab Ron McLean, like he would grab his arm.
No.
And it was just like,
really?
Yeah, it was so awkward because it was, you know, like Ron McLean would be like, hey, what about this? And Gary Bettman would be like, it's great. And then Ron McLean would be like, follow up question. No, it's not. You know, would you not want to do it this way or that way? And then, you know, and Gary Bettman would start interrupting, and Ron, and he'd be rolling his eyes and just doing all those Gary Bettman things, and like actually grab him at some point. And it was speculated. I don't think there was ever, you know, there was ever any evidence, but there was some speculation that was maybe part of the reason that Ron McLean got nudged out of the hosting duties at some point, because Gary Bettman was just sick of this guy. And yeah, I can't remember if they did one last year. If they did, it wasn't really newsworthy, but it's always must see viewing because, you know, Ron McLean, God bless him, is, you know, he's been doing this a long time and he's not really, he doesn't have a lot of time for Gary Bettman just dodging and, you know,
yeah, good for him,
communicating on everything. So
the only other thing that really irked me, not like irked me, but I just think is weird out of the whole State of the Whatever address was, I get why the NHL is going to go play two preseason games in China. Like, I understand it. The NHL wants money. Money's awesome. We all want it. So you're going to go over there and try and tap a market that's got a billion people that have money and you want to get their money. But I just don't like the idea where they're going to go there and they're going to, you know, somehow making the Kings and Canucks play two preseason games is going to turn people into hockey fans. Yeah. There's no way. There's no way that's going to happen. But to do it under the guise of, you know, growing the game, reaching out to new markets, you can't tell me that Kings Canucks in China twice is going to ignite a new fan base and cause people to jump on the NHL bandwagon, but going to the Olympics doesn't help. You can't give me those two. You have to be honest with me. You have to go, look, we're not getting enough money out of the IOC, the IAHF, all that stuff, NBC. We're not getting enough money out of that. But we are getting enough money out of going to China, so that's why we're doing it. Just be honest with me. Don't tell me it's about growing the game and finding new fans, because if it was, you'd go to the Olympics.
If only we could send all of our very best players over to Asia for a couple of weeks and have them play super high-stakes hockey.
Watching the fucking 42-year-old... Sorry, quick. Oh, can I curse in this podcast? I never do it because we don't have the E and I try to avoid it.
But I'm just so...
I just want to let it fly now. Like sending over the corpses of the Sedins and like perhaps Ryan Miller if they re-sign him to play against the Kings who are not missed the playoffs in 2 or 3 years. Like say you're like, all right, here's what we're gonna do. Penguins, Capitals, Beijing. I'm like, oh, all right, yeah. I can get that makes sense. Blackhawks, whoever. Blackhawks,
like
Predators.
Man, like you gotta it's a geography.
I mean, yeah. But wait, is it a West Coast thing? So like West Coast fans in the States stay up to watch it? Because
no, I think it's more like I think that they're closer to, I don't know.
Oh no, come on, really?
Maybe.
So there's more Kings and Canucks fans in Beijing than the Penguins in the Capitals. Yeah, so that's why they're
there's three of each. I don't know.
Like play the game wherever you want. Bring it to China, Japan, Australia, Zimbabwe, the Congo. Bring it to anywhere people want to watch hockey. But just don't tell me it's to grow the game when you're not going to send everybody to the Olympics.
And as Gary Bettman said in his State of the Union, he says we're not anti-Olympics. We're just anti-disrupting our season. Your precious regular season, which is meaningless, but you know your playoff format. Which you're also completely fine with, renders your regular season pretty much meaningless. But we can't disrupt that. And oh, by the way, we enjoy the week off in between the conference finals and the Stanley Cup that we almost got. Enjoy the extra days off, you know. But we don't want to disrupt that February regular season that everyone loves so much. And the other thing that came out this week that we can just talk for 2 minutes about, because it's sort of related to this and the NHL growing the game and everything. ESPN puts out their list of the top 100 most famous athletes in the world.
Oh, today. I never saw this. Is it all time or just
in the world today?
Active. Okay.
Not one single hockey player on the list.
How many golfers?
A lot of golfers. A lot of basketball. You know, it's one of these things. Now, you know, it's all around the world, right? So it's obviously dominated by soccer. There's a lot of golf. There's a lot of basketball. There's a surprising amount of NFL. Is Eli Manning really more famous around the world than Sidney Crosby? Like, is Odell Beckham Jr. more famous?
Whoa.
Maybe.
Whoa. Maybe. Whoa. How dare you, sir? How dare you come into my podcast and start bad-mouthing the popularity of the greatest quarterback to ever beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl of all time?
How many times did he beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl?
Multiple times. Hold on. Let me just count these up. I think it was the one time. Oh, no, it was twice. Yes. He did it twice.
That's right. Yes. So... There was a badminton player on the list.
Tell me there was chess.
I don't know if this is true or not, but somebody mentioned that they thought there might be an esports like person on the list and no hockey. Now, the flip side of that, as I had people from ESPN point out to me, there was also no Major League Baseball players on the list. So And it was not, it was a list that was done, my understanding was it was done sort of objectively, like they fed in data about, you know, endorsements and all this other stuff. So if I know people hear this and they go, ESPN, they don't care about hockey. Like it wasn't just a bunch of ESPN guys sitting around just throwing names out there. So
shut up, Barry Melrose. Shut up, Linda Cohen. We're not putting that guy on the list.
But, you know, just a reminder, you know, once again, as this league doesn't even bother to go to the Olympics and, you know, does these kind of halfway attempts, like if this is where we are internationally, like you're way behind tennis and golf and all these other sports. I think there were like UFC on the list. It's, you know, and I know, believe me, I know that there are fans out there who hear this stuff. Like, this comes up every now and then, whether it's somebody makes a list or with TV ratings are down or revenue's flat. And I know there's fans out there who don't care. There's fans out there who say, I like the NHL, and that's as far as it goes. And if I don't care if the NHL is popular in China or Wyoming or Winnipeg, I don't care. It's number one in my house.
Right.
That's as far as I worry about. And in fact, if being popular somewhere else means we have to change, then I don't want to be popular. I'm happy with what we've got, and I don't care if no one else cares. And it's like, I get that, but at the same time, you got to pick a lane, right? Like you can't say you don't care and then complain when your hotel isn't showing hockey games or when the sports bar you go to has 20 TVs and it's all NBA and nobody's even thinking of putting the NHL on, or when you watch SportsCenter and there's no hockey, or when you listen to 6 hours of sports talk radio and the guy doesn't mention the NHL once, even though it's the middle of the playoffs. You can't complain about that. You can't, not to hit too close to home, but you can't complain when your favorite hockey writer gets laid off because their publication doesn't want to bother with hockey anymore.
Right.
And they come back and, you know, they're writing about esports or badminton because those are more popular. It's, you know, it's like the NHL is not some cool indie band where as long as they sell enough albums to rent a few hours of studio space, they'll keep putting out music and you can be happy and that's all that matters. Like, it's a little bit bigger than that. And I know I get why a lot of fans don't care about this stuff, but maybe you should, because it's not a good sign for the health of this league, and it's not a good sign for the effectiveness of the management and leadership of this league. And that's important because it certainly seems like we're going to have the same management and leadership for a long time to come.
You want to do the mailbag? A couple of questions and then get the heck out of here?
Let's do it.
Dan Michelson's got a good one. I don't know if you saw this one. I kind of thought about it on the train over here, so I'm maybe like a little more prepared, but he says, say a team beats another in the playoffs and they get to take one player from that team to the next round. Who would Nashville and Pittsburgh have taken with them after they won their series?
Ooh.
Here, I'll do mine, give you some time to I'll vamp for you. So Nashville, I'm thinking they take Taves from the Blackhawks. I'm thinking they take Tarasenko from the Blues. And I'm thinking they take John Gibson from the Ducks. So they have somebody to back up Pekka Rinne.
See,
I think that's how they would go there.
I'd agree with the first two, and then I think they take Getzlaff off the Ducks, especially with their injuries up the middle. I think they're...
Oh, that's true. Yeah, you're right. Johansson got hurt during... I was thinking Johansson got hurt after... Yeah, you're right. They knew about that already.
Final, so they'd have known.
Getzlaff, you're right.
And they'd probably be like, ah, we're setting goal. What's the worst that could happen to Pekka Rinne? Yeah, I would go those three, and the Penguins are... I don't know, who'd you take off Columbus? They'd be Bobrovsky. The other side, right? Like they, I feel like maybe Seth Jones, right? Because they need the blue line. Washington, I don't know. Do you take?
They're like, we're good.
You feel like for Washington, like they wouldn't take Ovechkin just because they know it would drive Washington fans crazy. Like they would grab someone else, or pass. That would be the ultimate power move. We're good. We defer.
You can take anybody you want. Anyone. Kuznetsov. No. We don't want to get it in the bloodstream.
We don't want to disrupt a good thing. We're all set. And then Carlson, off. Even with his broken ankles and whatever else. Yeah, he'd be the guy. That'd be a fun rule.
How do you feel about my idea? Since the regular season doesn't matter anymore, going into the Stanley Cup final, the team with the best record in the playoffs gets home ice. So the Predators would have had games 1 and 2 in Nashville. What do you think of that idea? That's a Dave Lozo question to the mailbag.
That's interesting. I guess you could do that. I mean, that makes the regular season even more useless. But my crazy idea that I proposed once, and I'll preface this by saying I know that everybody hates this idea. I've never met anyone who likes this idea, but I'm going to throw it out there anyways. Is the basically the other way. I want the regular season to matter more. I want seeding to matter more. So my proposal is in the NHL playoffs, home ice literally means home ice. You play all 7 games at home. We could squeeze the schedule down. There'd be less travel, less wear and tear on the players, and seeding would really, really matter. Now, you'd have to do something to split the revenue, because I know a lot of teams rely on getting those playoff dates, so you'd want to work something out there. I know people are like, yeah, but then some team might go 20 years without ever seeing a home playoff game. Yeah, you might. But think how crazy it's going to be when you get there. I mean, think about that, you know, 4 versus 5 seed. And like I say, you know, that you'd still have upsets, because visiting teams still do well in the NHL, but it wouldn't be as crazy. Maybe the upsets would matter more. The regular season would matter a lot more. First, you know, top seed. I know Capitals fans are like, why, you know, who cares if we finish first? We still have to play the Penguins. Yeah, well, if you had all 7 games at home and you could get the series done in 12 or 13 days and we could be out of here by the first week of June. Just going to throw that out there.
Marinate on that, readers.
When you win the President's Trophy and someone goes, they have home ice through the playoffs. Well, now they would, like literally the Washington Capitals would be like, we don't need, cancel the, get rid of your luggage. Unpack all the equipment. We are here for up the next 2 months. It'd be the same. It's basically what the NFL does. Although obviously the NFL there's no series, so it has to work that way. But that's my hateable idea. Feel free to rage tweet me and let me know how you hate it.
Let's do one more and then let's split. Because I don't think we actually ever gave our answer on this when we were talking about it earlier. Pekka or UC Saros?
No,
you got Pekka Rinne.
You gotta, if you go down 3-0. Then you can make the switch. But I'm going to defer to you because we did the same discussion with Matt Murray and Marc-Andre Fleury, and you were right and I was wrong. So
again, I was right in my analysis. Yeah. I openly admit I don't know too much about Saros, except that apparently he funds left wing protests.
Oh, yeah, I'm it's a big
that
fan.
Guy.
He's
got
like
a ton of money, this guy. Yeah, so he funds marches. So apparently he's a really, you know, he's good with his money. He knows how to get people fired up. The reason why I wouldn't do it is because there's 2 days off. I feel like the 2 days off will be good for the 34-year-old body of Pekka Rinne, and he'll come out and he'll play well in 3. But the problem is that there's 1 day between 3 and 4, so then you're right back where you started, and you can't win game 3 and then go to Saros. Right. So then what do you do if you lose game 4? You're going to ask Saros to win 3 straight?
I feel like it's...
They're boxed in.
Yeah, I feel like it's, you know, short leash. But because the thing is, like, you know, it worked for the Penguins, but the Penguins had a guy... I mean, they had 2 guys who had both won cups.
Right.
And, you know, it's the kind of thing where, you know, if they go to the backup, then everyone's going to be like, wow, what a gutsy move. What a, you know, this and that. But what if he goes in and he gives up 2 goals in the first 3 minutes and the building's dead quiet and everyone's looking around going, what the hell did we just do? Like, we had
the redemption of Pekka Rinne. He comes in off the bench and saves the day.
That'd be a good story.
Save the day, I guess. Yeah, I'd go Rinne, and then I would treat him like Jake Allen or, you know, like Devin Dubnyk or something like that, where if 4 minutes in he gives up a terrible goal, if Jake Guentzel beats him from center ice and I got to read some more about how great Jake Guentzel is, then you're gone. We're putting in Saros and we're going to roll the dice then. That's my answer.
Okay.
All right. Well, it's 2:02. It's time to get the heck out of here. By the way, I want to just point out that when I dropped the F-bomb earlier, me and Tim Barnes immediately locked eyes because I don't think he's ever heard me drop an F-bomb during the podcast. Like, we were just kind of like... yeah, whatever, fine. It's a podcast. You can do whatever you want. Thanks for listening. Next week, I think me and Sean got to talk about this afterwards because game 5 is on a Thursday next week, so maybe we'll do something a little different.
If necessary.
But we haven't. If necessary, obviously. So maybe the same time and same place, but maybe not. We'll figure that out and let you know. And that's it for me. You got anything you want to say to the people?
No. Enjoy the potential last week of the NHL season. And,
yes. Enjoy your 2 days off of Pekka Rinne Saros debates.
It's totally okay to already kind of be checked out and thinking ahead to the off season, and we're a couple weeks away from crazy trades and expansion stuff and the draft and all of that stuff. So it's going to be good. So that gives you something to think about during the 3-day long gaps in between games we got to deal with the rest of the way.
Yeah. All right. That's the optimism we're leaving you with. See ya.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.